there's no easy way to say what we're about to say.
We believe your wife is a German spy.
This year, the truth will be discovered.
I know for a fact you'll be proven wrong.
Allied, starring Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard. Allied, in cinemas November 25th, rated TBC.
Hey, what happened to my kiss?
Wednesday, February 4th, 2015, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Coming to you today on a little bit of a snowy day here in Denver, getting some snow, getting some sun. You know, it's a typical day in Denver here in the winter. You know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different outlook on sports than you're going to get anywhere else. The great thing about the podcast, you can download it, you can listen to it, you can share it with friends, and you can get it whenever you want and listen to it when it's, you know, most convenient for you. A couple places you can get it, or a couple places you can tell your friends to go get it. You can go to iTunes. You can subscribe to it there. You can go to podomatic.com. You can go to podcastdirectory.com. We are actually looking at getting it a few more places for you, but you can definitely get it in those three places right now. If you would like to contact me, you can always find me. You can get me at Twitter at DailyDose22, DALYDose22, or you can find me at Facebook, cd.daily.dose. If you've got a thought, if you've got a comment, if you would like to give me some feedback, if you would like to sponsor me and send me some checks, any of those things is fine. Contact me one of those two places. You can always find me there. Got a lot to get to this week. Big, big week. Obviously, we got to talk a lot about the Super Bowl. Going to be a heavy Super Bowl recap day. Going to look forward just a little bit to next season. And you know, we've got, you know, college signing day. We've got a few things to get to today. Going to try to get to some NBA news and some things that are coming out in the National Basketball Association. And as usual, we do have our Daily Dose Top 5. You do not want to miss that one today. Got a good one for you today. Hey, breaking news. Couple things going on in the world of sports today. College football signing day is going on, where we have the top recruits, top high school recruits in the country picking where they are going to go to college. I've got a little bit of a problem with signing day. Not that they do it, and the fact that they have these 18-year-old kids up here doing the, which hat am I going to pick? What hat am I going to put on? As bad as that is, and sometimes as painful as that is, and some of these kids, it's brutal to actually watch this. But the problem that I have with college signing day is, aren't we just guessing at all this? I mean, isn't this just a huge guess? We look at these prospects and we say, oh well, yeah, he looked pretty good at his school. I guess he's good. I don't know. Now you got to realize you're the biggest fish in your pond at high school. It's not going to be that way when you get to the college level. You're going to be playing against the best. So it's all just kind of a guess. Now, let me throw out a scenario to prove my point. Let's say you go to a high school game, and you're looking at the quarterback for this school here in Texas, whatever it might be, and you see Nick Saban there. And Nick Saban says, well, I'm looking at the safety for that team over there. Oh, well, then he must be a five-star recruit. Now, he hasn't been a five-star recruit up to this point. He hasn't been a five-star recruit at all. In fact, no one even knew who he was. But Saban's looking at him. So based entirely just off of that, not anything he's done on the field, we're going to say, oh, well, he's a five-star recruit. That's how inexact this science is. And that's how much we're just guessing at all this. So I don't put a ton into it. I realize it's a huge day, especially down south, SEC country. You've got people, you know, taking the day off of work and doing parties and the whole thing for signing day. Here's what you're going to find. And I'll just give this to you right now. You're going to get these schools will probably have the biggest hauls. You'll have like Ohio State, Florida State, Alabama, USC will have a big day. Notre Dame will probably have a big day. It's usually the same pretty much every single year. The thing is, it's so inexact. When you look at, say, like Marcus Mariota was like a two-star recruit coming out of high school. Look at Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson was a two-star recruit. We didn't even know if he'd play football. They were looking at him more as a baseball player. So don't buy in completely. You have these schools, and you have these fans of the schools, and they completely buy in because it gives them hope. Hey, this is going to be our year. Look at the recruiting class we have. Maybe. Or you have the other schools that say, well, you know, we take two stars and we turn them into five stars. Well, maybe, but maybe it was just they shouldn't have been rated a two star to begin with. So slow down on all the college signing day stuff. I get it. You kind of keep an eye on it, look at it. You know, if one school is just having a huge haul, you might pay attention, but don't buy into it like it's the end all be all, because it's not. Yesterday, we had some news come out. MMA fighter Anderson Silva. Now, Anderson Silva fought Nick Diaz over the weekend. Silva wins the fight. But after the fight, and we saw this just a few weeks ago, both fighters this time tested positive for illegal substances. So Silva tests positive for anabolic steroids, and Diaz tests positive for marijuana. And don't forget, this is coming just after a few weeks. You know, John Jones got popped for cocaine use after the fight. What is the fight game coming to? I mean, that we can't have clean fighters. I mean, next you're gonna say that we got, you know, dirty judges and dirty promoters, and what is the fight game coming to? It is just getting filthy these days. I actually saw someone post this on Facebook. The, you know, fighting is just getting so dirty. Is it? Is it getting dirty? Or has it always been dirty? Yeah, big surprise. Both fighters were doing something they shouldn't have been doing. In the NFL, we have two players apparently having some issues with substances. Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon has tested positive for alcohol. We told you that last week. But it looks like the NFL is going to suspend him a minimum of one season. A minimum of one season. And then yesterday we had Johnny Manziel apparently going to enter some sort of rehab center. It was tough for me, and I hope, genuinely hope, because it is a serious issue. Addiction and all those things are serious problems. I hope that Johnny Manziel is taking the step and saying, hey, I do see some issues. The problem is I don't know exactly what he's going into. I don't know if he's going into... because they didn't say. They said he was entering some sort of a rehab to help him be a better family member and teammate. Does that mean he's going to counseling? Does that mean he is going to like a spa for a PR move so we think he's trying to do these things? Or does that mean he has like a cocaine addiction that we didn't know about and he's going into like rehab? And instead of Johnny Football, he's like Johnny Speedball. I don't know exactly what to make of that. I hope that it's something that he recognizes he has an issue and that he is trying to take care of it. I hope it's not a situation where it was a PR move to try to make people think I like Johnny's game. I think he's a very, very talented guy. He just kind of sometimes strikes me maybe someone that we might not buy into completely what he tells us. I don't know why. I just kind of have that idea. Before we get to the Super Bowl, and I do want to jump in because we have so much to talk about today. But before we get to the Super Bowl, I want to look at a couple of other stories that are out. First off, MVP voting this past week in the NFL. You might have saw Aaron Rodgers won the MVP. Second place, J.J. Watt, Tony Romo, DeMarco Murray, Tom Brady, and Bobby Wagner actually got a vote from the Seattle Seahawks. Now, I realize that's probably not newsworthy. I said Aaron Rodgers was going to be the MVP like a month ago. But one thing I just want to bring to your attention, and one thing I just want you to think about, out of those six players, four of them were top first-round draft picks. I mean, I'm sorry, four of them weren't. Only two of them were top picks. Aaron Rodgers was a first-round pick out of Cal. J.J. Watt was a first-round pick out of Wisconsin, although they were saying probably as a tight end, not as a defensive end. And then you have the other four guys, later-round picks. Romo wasn't drafted. DeMarco Murray was in the third round. They didn't know if he could hold up. Tom Brady was sixth round. Bobby Wagner was second round out of Utah State, but they really didn't know if he was ever going to play. They were looking more maybe as like a special teams player. That is what I'm talking about when I'm saying how inexact of a science this is as far as evaluating talent. How does it translate to the next level? We don't know. And I know you have a lot of people telling you, well, that means this player is going to be great. College signing day, this player is going to be great. Maybe. Draft day, this player is going to be great. You know, he's drafted in the first. Maybe. We don't really know. And I don't know if it's because of the expectations put on these players. I don't know if it's because when you're drafted a little lower, you're put on a little bit better team, or maybe it's just the right situation. I don't know what it is. I do know this. It's not an exact science. It is never an exact science. NFL announced their Hall of Fame voting this last week, and we have a few new members heading into the Hall of Fame. NFL Hall of Fame will induct running back from the Pittsburgh Steelers, Jerome Bettis, played for 13 seasons. 13,000 yards, six-time Pro Bowl selection, was started off with the Rams and then ended up with the Steelers. Jerome Bettis is getting in. Tim Brown. Tim Brown is a guy that I think should have been actually a long, long time ago. Tim Brown had one final season, you might not remember, with Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but spent most of his career with the Los Angeles and Oakland Raiders. And this guy, and again, I know it took him a while to get in, had over 1,000 receptions, but had 100 touchdowns. That's like a touchdown every 10 catches. Plus, he was a phenomenal punt and kickoff return guy. We got to see him a lot here in Denver with him being a Raider for so long. Tim Brown, long time deserved. I like seeing him get in. And you know, the thing I like about Tim Brown getting in is this was before the era of the prima donna wide receiver. You had guys that actually went out and blocked. You had guys that actually ran over the middle, took the big shots, and got up and went back to it again. So Tim Brown, much deserved. Charles Haley, the only player to ever win 5 Super Bowls, is getting in. Had 100 sacks during his 12-year career with the Cowboys and the Niners. And 6 times in his career, he posted double-digit sack totals. Charles Haley gets in. Bill Polian. And Bill Polian is getting in, you know, as one of those contributors, general manager who built up some teams. He had the Buffalo Bills and then the Indianapolis Colts and took them to 5 Super Bowls combined. Was the NFL Executive of the Year 6 times. Junior Seau times, you know, 12 Pro Bowls. Junior Seau had the phenomenal career. And then, of course, as we know, the very, very tragic ending to his life after his career that they say. Will Shields with the Kansas City Chiefs had 14 seasons and was named to the all-decade team of the 2000s, 12 straight Pro Bowls. Will Shields gets in. Mick Tinglehoff was signed as a free agent by the Minnesota Vikings. And during his starting time at center, never missed a game in 17 seasons. 7-time All-League, went to 6 straight Pro Bowls. Lastly, you had Ron Wolf, a VP and GM with the Raiders. He also spent some time with the Packers, and in 23 years, always had his teams, had winning seasons, except for 6 times. So Ron Wolf gets in, one of those guys that gets in kind of under the old-timer plan. Guys who didn't make the Pro Bowl, or didn't make the Hall of Fame, I'm sorry. Marvin Harrison, wide receiver with the Indianapolis Colts. I think it's a matter of time before he gets in. Orlando Pace, offensive lineman with the St. Louis Rams, and Kurt Warner, another Ram that didn't get in. John Lynch with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and later with the Denver Broncos. Tony Dungy, coach with the Buccaneers and the Colts. Jimmy Johnson did not get in with the, you know, coach with the Cowboys and later with the Miami Dolphins. And then Terrell Davis, a running back here with the Denver Broncos. Here's the thing that I was talking to a few friends about. What gets you into the Hall of Fame? I think we're going to have to do a show about this at some point. But when I look at guys getting into the Hall of Fame, obviously you have to have the career. You have to have the numbers. Longevity, I think, is something that probably they base things on really, really heavily. I don't know if they should, but here is kind of my rule. Yes, you have to have some numbers. Yes, you have to have some career stats because we're basing this on your career. It can't be a one-time thing. Championships obviously helps you. If you have championships, we rate that a little higher. But here's the thing that I look at when I'm looking at Hall of Famers, and I don't care if it's football, I don't care if it's basketball, I don't care if it's baseball. I don't care if it's hockey, except for I have no idea hockey even has a Hall of Fame. But when I look at a Hall of Famer, here's kind of if you pass the smell test. Could I write your team history or league history and not include you in it? And if I can, then you probably, it's not really necessary for you to be there. If I can't, then we've got to look at putting you in the Hall of Fame. It's not just, did you have to have the best numbers ever? No, not necessarily. Your numbers are going to help. And if you have career stats, that's going to put you in. Now, I can't put in the guy, Timmy Smith has one great Super Bowl game, and so he gets in. No. I'm not talking about that. Could you write the history without him? No, of course not. But he only had the one season. It's got to be the combination of both. It has to be, do you have the career stats, and do you have a historical significance that I can say, okay, this person belongs in the story of the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball or whatever it might be. That's, to me, is what makes a Hall of Famer. Going to get to the Super Bowl, but prior to the Super Bowl, did you happen to watch NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell? You know, he had his State of the NFL press conference. First off, he had it on Friday afternoon. Now, that might not seem significant to you, but it is. Let me tell you why he has it on Friday afternoon. See, when teams want to, entities want to come out with a big story, they're going to put it out on a Monday. It's something we want people to see. It comes out on a Monday or it comes out on a Wednesday or whatever. If I don't want anyone to notice or pay attention to it, then I do it on Friday afternoon, especially the Friday before Super Bowl Sunday, because everyone is going, hey, it's Friday. What are we going to do this weekend? Where are we going to watch the game? What do you got going tomorrow? Are we going to go out tonight after work? No one pays attention on Friday. You think it's a coincidence that the NFL had their State of the Union, basically press conference, on a Friday afternoon? It's not. They didn't want anyone watching it, and they didn't want anyone to pay attention to it. Too bad that I'm just stupid enough to do it anyway. Here is the thing that stood out to me, and there's a few things. Roger Goodell went up there, and with all of the issues that are involved in the league, we have player safety, concussion numbers. We have obviously off-field issues. We have all the things, failures in the investigation processes. We have franchises that are not being supported and are talking about moving. All these issues. Roger Goodell comes out and he talks about changing the extra point and how they might tweak replay. Barely talked about the big issues. He really didn't want to discuss the big issues. And when some of the reporters tried to pin him down on some of these issues, he kind of ignored it. Now, I have not been a Roger Goodell hater. I have not been the guy that's been sitting there saying, hey, Goodell just seems clueless. I'm starting to turn that way, though. I really am. Because Goodell is coming off to me as just being completely narcissistic and delusional about what's going on in the league. He talked about how Marshawn Lynch must talk to the media. And as you all know, we had our interview with Marshawn Lynch last week. I don't know what everybody's talking about. He couldn't have been more friendly and open with me. But Goodell talks about how Lynch must talk to the media, but Goodell doesn't talk to the media. He completely refuses to. And when they asked him about, hey, the NFL has had a tough year. You've obviously had some offseason problems. There have been some things that have gone on that have kind of tarnished the image of the NFL. Goodell's answer was, well, it's been a tough year on me personally. Oh, well, it's all about you, Roger. It is all about you. Forget the league. Forget all this stuff going on. I'm sorry it's been hard on you, Roger. I'm sure that multi-million-dollar contract you're sucking up helps cushion the blow a little bit. Rachel Nichols, who I believe is with CNN now, she actually asked him about the NFL's conflict of interest. And how they've hired Ted Wells to come in and do this investigation with the Patriots. And how, they had the Mueller report earlier about all this stuff. And she said, isn't there a conflict of interest? Because the NFL is paying these investigators. So what's he really going to say? Is he really going to say, well, the NFL's dirty here? And while we're looking at that, Robert Kraft is paying Roger Goodell because all the owners are who hires this guy. So isn't there a conflict of interest of who's investigating who? It seems like you're not really bringing in guys to really try to find something. And you know what Goodell's answer was? Well, someone has to pay for it unless you're going to pay for it. He tells Rachel Nichols, unless you're going to pay for an investigator, I don't have much of a choice. Here's the problem, Roger. It's not Rachel Nichols' league. It's yours. It's not her problem. It's yours. And he just comes off like this politician that is, making this six-figure salary and has no idea what the general public. He's so removed from reality. He has no idea what's going on. Let's get to the game. Let's actually get to the game. How was your Super Bowl party? I hope you had a good party. I hope you didn't have too many of the bettors or the intense fans or the person that came there and didn't want to be there. I hope you had a great Super Bowl party. I know that I did. I was with good friends and good family, and we had a great time. Quick side note before we jump into the game itself. Can I just say one thing? The uniforms for both of these teams, Patriots and Seahawks, are hideous. They're both, they're almost exactly the same. The only difference, they're both that kind of horrible off navy kind of color and gray. The only difference is one has some red trim and the other has this neon green trim. And I don't know why they think that's a good idea. But both these uniforms have to go. Go back to the old ones. Remember when the Patriots had the clean, the white helmet, the red top, the white pants? It looked clean. It looked sharp. Even the Seahawks, when they had the royal blue and the silver, and then they just barely had any of that green. We might have to do a uniform podcast and talk about some of the best uniforms, because these two uniforms, I'm just turning on the game, and I'm just like, these are horrible. These look like they're World League uniforms. Not a good look. Just not a pretty Super Bowl to look at. Anyways, sorry. Quick side note. Tom Brady started off the game, sharp. He was hitting the short passes, quick. Everything was quick and sharp. Patriots are 14-7. 30 seconds left in the first half, and you're saying, hey, they're in pretty good shape. Seattle goes 80 yards in 29 seconds to tie it up at 14 at halftime. And in the second half, Seattle goes up 24-14 late in the third. And Tom Brady, who was sharp with the short passes, throws two really bad interceptions. One down at the goal line as they are going in early to score. And then another one, he didn't look that sharp. And when the Seahawks went up 24-14, you kind of started to feel like this game's getting away. This game might be over. You started to get the feeling that the Patriots kind of thought it was over, and you started to get the feeling that, unfortunately, the Seahawks also thought it was over. You had three drives in the second half with Seattle holding on to a 14-point or a 10-point lead that you were like, if you guys get any points, this is over. I mean, Richard Sherman's talking to the camera, 24, that was completed on 24, he's running his mouth. Pete Carroll's cracking some jokes on the sideline. I mean, they have the greatest defense. They were talking about the greatest defense maybe in the history of the NFL. They were comparing them to the Ravens. They were comparing them to the 85 Bears. This might be the greatest defense in history. 10 points, you're not coming back against the Legion of Boom. But keep in mind what I told you, and I've been telling you this for the past 2 months. Seattle hasn't faced many good quarterbacks all year. If we go back, starting now, you faced Aaron Rodgers on one leg, Cam Newton, Sean Hill, Ryan Lindley, Colin Kaepernick, Mark Sanchez, Colin Kaepernick again, because one time wasn't enough, Drew Stanton, Alex Smith, Eli Manning, Derek Carr, Cam Newton again, Austin Davis. So it's not a huge surprise when Brady gets the Patriots back into this with a touchdown. With 8 minutes left, they go down and they score and they tighten it up to 24-21. 8 minutes left in the game. Wait a second. Before we get any further, I got to talk about halftime. I enjoyed Chaz Michael Michaels singing Roar, with the cast of SpongeBob SquarePants as much as anybody. I did. I thought it was solid. Wasn't anything great. It's halftime entertainment. It's better than, the high school band or Up With People. I get it. A couple of thoughts, though. First off, I didn't quite understand SpongeBob SquarePants characters being out there with the shark and the... I'm not sure if I understood that. But we barely saw Lenny Kravitz. I mean, it's Lenny Kravitz. It's not like this is a nobody that we're like, oh, here's some guitar guy. It's Lenny Kravitz. We barely saw him. But then out comes Missy Elliott. And I'll be honest, Missy kind of stole the show. I mean, we haven't seen her in like 10 years, and Missy Elliott kind of steals the show. And here's the thing. I don't know how to say this. There are certain people in this world that have a look to them. They have a certain look. And Missy Elliott kind of has this look. And I know going back 10 years, I just thought she has this look about her. And I don't know exactly how to say this, and it's going to sound bad. I realize it's going to sound bad, but we haven't seen her in a while. I mean, it's been a long. I'm just gonna say it. I honestly thought by this time, because we hadn't seen her in so long, I thought she'd be like 3 or 4 spins on the scale, and she wasn't. She wasn't. I really did. I thought she just kind of had that look, like she would be the kind that would just kind of, blow up. She looked great. I thought she looked really, really good. I kind of expected her to be on, like pretty Biggest Loser or something. No. She looked better than ever. She really, Missy, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. My bad. Hey, go on. Get your freak on, girl. Anyways, it's weird. It's weird because, I mean, you had the Patriots in the Super Bowl. You had Missy Elliott performing. I mean, gas prices are under $2. Suge Knight is getting charged with murder. I thought it was like 2003. It's crazy. I was getting ready to go see Fast and the Furious. Wait, I think I can actually still go see that. Isn't that coming out again? I think Paul Walker, and he's still in it. I don't know how that works, but I saw a Fast and the Furious preview during the game, and Paul Walker is still in it. And then someone said he had died. I didn't even know he was sick. Anyways, back to the game. And were there any good commercials? Was anything good in the commercials? There was like a preview for a new Terminator movie. I thought for a second that Arnold Schwarzenegger was Nick Cage when it first... There weren't even any good commercials that really stood out to me that I was like, okay, that's good. It seemed like there was more sad commercials this year than funny. I guess if that's the marketing angle you want to go at, but that doesn't do anything for me. Anyways, enough of halftime. Back to the game. Okay, so the Patriots go 68 yards, 9 plays, and then go 64 yards and 10 plays back-to-back right down your throat, including a 3rd-and-14 to Julian Edelman for 21 yards. Now, if you get a stop there, if the Legion of Boom gets a stop there, game's probably over because they're going to have to punt. You can kill some more time, and it's going to come down to minutes. But I bring up that 3rd-and-14 play for another reason. Remember Roger Goodell? Roger Goodell talked a little bit in that press conference on Friday when he didn't want anybody to see. He talked a little bit how the NFL is really going to step up how to, you know, deal with concussions, and we've got a better plan, and we're trying to get some things done on concussions. Now, first off, Edelman may have been the MVP. Dude finished with 9 catches, 109 yards, and 4 of those catches were first downs and 1 touchdown. But on the 3rd down conversion, on this 3rd-and-14, Edelman gets hit by Cam Chancellor. And seriously, if you were watching the game or if you had the sound up, it sounded like 2 baseball bats hitting each other. And Edelman kind of stumbles forward and falls down, and he gets up and he's still kind of stumbling. Dude was out on his feet. Remember that concussion stuff? Not sure the Pats medical staff really looked at him. Bill Belichick says they did. We checked him out. We looked at him. He seemed like he was fine. So, I mean, they must have, because Bill Belichick wouldn't lie to us, right? It's not like Belichick's going to tell us anything that's not true. So, surely they checked him out, right? Tell me that that's not... Okay. Here's a problem. If you are really, really going to be serious about player safety, don't you need to, at some point, have impartial doctors that say, hey, that guy just got hit and is stumbling around and is looking out at his ear hole. We might want to take a look at him. Otherwise, you're just giving lip service on this whole player safety thing. Anyways, Seattle takes over, down by 4, 2 minutes left. And in 6 plays, and an absolutely insane catch by Jermaine Kearse. I'm not going to put it up there as the greatest catch of all time. I know some people will. I'm not going to. But, Russell Wilson chucks one up, tipped. Kearse falls down. It hits like knee, hand, knee, other hand, head. He catches it and really could have got up and run with it, but the corner came over and touched him. One more running play, and the Seahawks have the ball at the 1-yard line. And you can just see Patriot fans are numb. They can't believe this is going to happen again on a bizarre, crazy, insane catch. We had the game won. Brady brought us back. We're going to lose this game. They have the ball at the 1-yard line. There's about a minute left to go. Fans are numb. Brady has his head in his hands. Brady's going, I should have deflated the footballs more. And Belichick is so stunned that he's not even burning his timeouts to save time for Brady. I know what they're going to spin. They're going to say, Belichick's going to say, well, I had a plan the whole time. I just thought we could serve our timeouts. So, don't believe it. Didn't know what. I think there literally was a moment where they said, oh my goodness, this is happening to us again. This is going to happen again. It happened just like David Tyree with the Giants back in 2007. Seahawks are going to run Lynch. They're going to have Wilson and Lynch go 2 or 3 times, eat up the clock, ball game, this is over. And we're going to be saying how Brady and Belichick choke in the big one. Brady's not the greatest quarterback ever. He's been okay, but he had 2 horrible interceptions that he shouldn't have thrown. And both of them, the one was a force to Gronk he had no business throwing. And then, you know, the play of the game. Russell Wilson, with Marshawn Lynch standing next to him, drops straight back, no play action, throwing that out there, no play action, and throws a quick slant into the middle of the field. Ball is intercepted, and everything changes completely. Because now we are being told Tom Brady, without question, is the greatest quarterback to ever walk the planet Earth. And if that is the case, then Bill Belichick then must be the greatest too. 1-4, been to 6, has to be the greatest ever. We were getting ready to talk about how Pete Carroll is so good in big games. Everything changed on that one play. Now, you are starting to hear some contrarians. You are starting to hear some people come out and say, well, actually, it was the right call. It actually was. It was not a bad call. Russell Wilson even said, well, this is a play that we run when we get down the goal line. It was the right call. Coach made the right call. I ran it because it was the right call. And you also are hearing people say, well, if it had worked, it would have been a great call. But the fact that it didn't work, and so we're saying it's a bad call. Here's the thing. No, it wouldn't. It was the dumbest call in the history of the Super Bowl. In 49 years, there has not been a dumber play call in the Super Bowl. And if you don't think so, name one that's dumber. See, here's the thing. Bill Belichick didn't even out-coach Pete Carroll. You could say up to that point, Pete Carroll had actually had the upper hand. I realize the Patriots had played pretty good in the first half, although they didn't show it on the scoreboard. It was tied at the end of the first half. And they had played a bad third quarter. Then they outplayed Seattle in the fourth quarter. Hit and miss first half, and then they kind of split quarters. It was pretty close to being even. But Carroll is going to get over on him at the end. All they got to do is run it in. You know who outcoached Pete Carroll? Pete Carroll. That's who outcoached him. That's the only person that outcoached him. And so everything changes on that one play. Now, a couple thoughts on the play. As a former coach, and I realize I'm not at the level of these guys, not at the NFL, but here's the thing as a head coach, and I don't care what level you're at. When you are a head coach in these tight situations, game is on the line. The rule that you follow, or you're supposed to follow, is best players and best play. So I want my absolute best player handling the ball on this play, and I want them running the best play for the time and score that we have. Down by four, best player, Russell Wilson and Marshawn Lynch, those are your two best players. Based on that, I'm going to put the ball in their hands to make the best play that they can be successful in. But Pete Carroll got cute. He got cute. So instead of saying, okay, best players, best play, let's go Marshawn Lynch. We've got basically Earl Campbell sitting here. We're going to hand him the ball, go up the gut and see what we get. Or we're going to go read option. We're going to go with Wilson, maybe get him out on the edge. We fake the handoff. We run him outside. I said before, you know, no play action. Why wouldn't you go play action? Why wouldn't you try to freeze some people? They didn't even do that. We're going to go quick slant, and we're just going to beat you because we're just a little bit smarter than you. Nice job. Nice job, genius. That's what happens when you do these things. You could have gone with a option read, fake it, get him out on the edge. He's running. Now he's outside the pocket. If he wants to throw it up in the seats, feel free. Stops the clock. Everything's fine. Nope. We're going to be a little bit smarter than that. We're going to be just a little bit cute. And again, now you're starting to hear some people say, well, it was the right play. They just didn't execute, but it was the right play. No, it wasn't. Think about this for 1 second. They're on the 1 yard line, not on the 5, not on the 10, not with that space. You have about 11 yards of space here, and you've got 22 people. So with the wide out split out, I've got about 18 people all in this small area, and I'm going to throw it in there? You saw at the end of the first half. Now, granted, they were back on about the 10-yard line, but you saw in the first half, they threw that little back shoulder throw at the end of the first half for that touchdown that Seattle did. Okay, I would be fine with something like that. Maybe it's a little too cramped here, but the fade to the corner, the rollout, you know, the tight end crossing, something like that, but not the quick slant into bodies because there's so many bad things that can happen. What if it had just gotten deflected? What if it hadn't been intercepted? And I give the corner some credit. You know, he jumps the route, he steps in front, and he intercepts the pass. But what if it had just been deflected up into the air and anybody could have caught it? Bad things can happen. And that's the reason that this play totally flipped the game. Remember back in the movie Hoosiers? And right at the end of the big game, you know, the coach comes over and he calls the squad in and he tells them, hey, here's the play we're going to run. They're going to be expecting the ball to go to Jimmy Chitwood, so we're going to trick them and we're going to go over here. And all the team kind of pouts and, coach, that's not right. And he says, what's wrong with you guys? What's wrong with you? And then Jimmy says, coach, I'll make it. Didn't it kind of feel like that was kind of what happened here? Well, except for that, you know, it's Marshawn Lynch. And instead of saying, I'll make it, he's saying, I'm only here, so I won't get fined. But same kind of mentality. We're going to be just cuter than everyone else, and we're going to beat him here. And now we're getting, you know, these mass media conglomerates coming out. You know the one I'm talking about, the big sports media company that's out there on TV everywhere. And they are telling us, you know, Bill Belichick says it's the right call. He said that was actually the right call. Did he really? Oh, I'm really surprised. I'm really shocked that Bill Belichick would say that was right. Of course he said it's the right call. If you would have punted there, he would have said that was the right call too. You just cemented his legacy and gave him the Super Bowl. Yes, of course, that was the right call. Good call, coach. Attaboy, Pete Carroll. You made a great call there. That was a really good play call. You did great. Now, like I said, everything switched on that play. And now you have these people telling us, well, now without question, Brady is the greatest quarterback ever. Well, I'm not as sure. I'm not saying he's not. He's in the conversation. But it's not just cut and dried because, again, just one play before, you were getting ready to say this game's over the other way. And so we might want to wait until the emotions wear down, because right now Patriot fans are on this huge high of we almost lost and then we won, and they're so excited. And so Belichick is the greatest coach ever. He knew this was all coming. In fact, he let them drive down to the one just to tease him because he's just that smart. And Brady is the greatest ever. And forget those bad interceptions. He's the greatest ever. And well, yeah, he lost those two Super Bowls to Eli Manning, but he is the greatest quarterback who ever walked the face of the earth. Again, slow down a little bit. You know the worst part about this? And we talked about this a little bit last week. I told you it's going to be rough because we have two obnoxious fan bases, and one of them's going to win. Granted, it was fun to see, you know, Seattle lose and the Legion of Boom, and they were going to stop everyone, and no one could drive on them. That part of it was kind of fun. It was. To see Richard Sherman have to walk out with his head down, that part of it was kind of fun. But now we have to have, you know, the Boston fans and all the Patriot fans telling us how they never had any doubt. And we saw Tom Brady, I never had any doubt, and we knew we were going to get this. Did you? Did you really? Because just one play earlier, when they had driven down to the one and now they're running the clock out and they're going to score and leave you no time left, Boston fan, you were actually turning on the oven and opening it and sticking your big head in it just to end it. You were starting your car and leaving the garage door closed just 5 seconds before, and someone said, oh, hey, they intercepted it, and you ran back in and said, oh, I knew it the whole time. You sure? You sure you knew it the whole time? I realize this is all karma going back on the Seahawks. Because Russell Wilson was crying saying he knew they were going to beat the Packers, you know, 2 weeks ago. I get that. But the whole we knew it the whole time, or we're just smarter than everyone else, as opposed to just being kind of lucky and things kind of fell the right way for you. I don't know. And like I said before, I do think we might have to have a podcast. We might have to have a show where we talk about the greatest quarterbacks of all time, because I have some thoughts, and they're probably not popular, but I think the logic that we apply when we look at greatest coach of all time, greatest player of all time, might be just a little bit flawed. I think there's some fundamental ideas about doing that I think are just a little bit off. Anyways, let's move forward. You know, Vegas actually lost money on this game, by the way. And there were some people after the game that actually said, well, I think the fix was in, and they just want the Patriots to win. Here's how I know it's not a fix. Because Vegas has a line, and Vegas doesn't like to mess around. Vegas isn't stupid. There are stupid people out there. Vegas isn't one of them. They don't do things unless they're going to lose money, or unless they're going to make money. But Vegas actually lost money on this game because they set some bad lines. When the line came in on the Seahawks and the Patriots initially, the money initially was on Seattle, and then Patriots money flowed in, but they set the over-under too low. They set it at 47.5. They lost significant money on that because a lot of people said this will be a higher scoring game than that. And then the Patriots ended up covering the spread, which is where all the money was coming in on, and they actually got that. So Vegas actually lost a little bit of money. That's how you know it's not fixed. If it's fixed, Vegas isn't touching it, and they're sure not going to lose money on it. They don't build those huge casinos on losing. Keep that in mind. Vegas came out after the game, and they set these kind of odds for next year, just something to think about. They have the Seattle at 5-1 to win the Super Bowl next year. They have the Patriots at 6-1 just a little bit behind them. And then they have the Packers and Broncos at 8-1 each. I'm going to go ahead and assume that they are thinking Peyton Manning is coming back, because if that's Brock Osweiler back there taking snaps, that's about 80-1. Looking at these two teams going forward, they both have a couple of free agents they're going to have to deal with. But for both Seattle and New England, their big year they're going to have to deal with is not this upcoming season. It's the one after that. That's going to be the big one that's going to shake up both of these teams a lot. Free agents for Seattle. They've got Jermaine Kearse, who had the big catch, obviously. Malcolm Smith. And then they've got some dead money. You know, they're still scheduled to pay Percy Harvin $7 million. But come 2016, that's going to change, because you're going to have to pay Russell Wilson a bunch of money. He'll be done with his rookie contract, and that's going to demand huge money. He will probably be the top paid quarterback in the NFL at that time. And then on the Patriots side, they've got a couple guys they've got to pay. They've got a couple of free agents. Vereen and Stephen Ridley are both going to be free agents. Devin McCourty is going to be a free agent, and their kicker, Steven Gostkowski, is going to be a free agent. Not huge, though. Not huge. They can overcome that. And bizarrely, New England, because you think of Belichick and Brady, oh, they're so old. This is a very, very young New England team. But come 2016, they're going to get hit a little bit harder in free agency. Chandler Jones, LeGarrette Blount, Dante Hightower. That'll start hit them, you know, just a little bit harder. Start to hit them just a little bit harder. Going to be interesting to see what these two teams do down the road. You know, the way this all shakes out, their comeuppance is coming. You're going to have to pay the piper at some point for this, especially New England, because they've had quite a run here. Eventually, they're going to have to go back to reality. The one thing I do want to stress to you, though, with all the stuff that these media things tell you, and they say, you know, Brady's the greatest quarterback, and this all changed, and everything's now. Can I just say this as a listener of the Daily Dose? If you take nothing from this podcast, can you just be smarter than to just be spoon-fed the nonsense that they feed you sports-wise? And I'm not talking about don't believe the mass media and there's UFOs. And I'm talking about that stuff. But when the mass media and certain broadcasting companies there out there in sports start to tell you these things, well, this just proves that Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever. Don't believe that just yet. It doesn't quite make sense, because remember, we were just seconds away from it being completely, completely different. Don't quite buy into that hype. I'm not quite sure what to do now that football season's over. The one thing I want to encourage you, you know, your Sunday afternoon is going to be open, but one thing that will not change, the Daily Dose, we still will continue to provide good content for you. It's not like football season ends and we go away. I realize you're a football fan. I get it. But hey, we will cover basketball. We will cover baseball. We will cover hockey. We'll still cover football stories. And we'll always keep you on top of things and give you a little bit different outlook. Don't feel like, well, football season's over, so no more Daily Dose. No. We have you covered. Do not fear. We have you covered. You know, one thing I'm thinking about, and I'm not quite sure, and I kind of need your help on this. I'm throwing this out there to you listeners of the Daily Dose. I'm not quite sure about this, but I'm thinking about it. You know, Sunday, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger now that our Sundays are you know, null and void. I'm starting to think about kind of adopting an English Premier team. I'm not a huge soccer guy. I like the World Cup, but it's only every 4 years. But I feel like maybe I should adopt a team. Now, when I look at these teams, and I don't know much about them, the only thing, because I don't have a team, I don't have like any allegiance to any of those teams over there, but it's getting bigger and bigger. And I feel like maybe if I had a team to cheer for, if I had a team to root for, maybe I would be at least a little bit interested in the English Premier Soccer League. I don't want to take a team. I don't want to be like the Cowboys, Yankees, Notre Dame bandwagoners. I don't want to just jump on like Manchester U and be like, okay, that's my team because they win every year. I want to pick, you know, like a kind of a tougher team. It's not every year they're going to win it. Yes, they're competitive. They have a good owner. I'm looking for something like that. If you have suggestions, if you have a team that you follow and you feel like, hey, here's the team you should follow, I'd be glad to kind of, you know, weigh these out and pick a team that might fit the best. If you have suggestions, send them to me, tweet them to me, send them on Facebook, whatever you have. I at least listen to it. I have a couple of caveats that I want to put on. One, like I said, I don't want the front runner. Here's the team that wins it every year. I don't want to do that. And two, I hate the color red. So at least give me a team that their uniforms aren't. It's what their kit. Their kit. Kits? Is it plural? I don't know. Whatever it is. I don't want the bulk of it to be red. I hate the color red. Give me something a little bit different. I don't even know what's out there. But if you have suggestions, if you have a team that you feel like I should adopt, I would be glad to at least listen to those suggestions. You can tell me why I should cheer for that team. I don't have any idea. But I feel like maybe it would liven up my Sundays a little bit more if I had a team to cheer for. Right now, I don't have any idea. Let's talk a little bit about the NBA. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the All-Star weekend is coming up here in a week or so, and the All-Star rosters have been set. I want to go over those. The dunk contest, we feel like we have a pretty good idea who's going to be in that, and then the three-point contest as well. In the East, for the East All-Star team, here is your team. And we talked about the starters at least, but let's go over the team real quick. Carmelo Anthony. Probably has no business being there. LeBron James, he sat out a lot. Pau Gasol has put up great stats. John Wall has been phenomenal. And then Kyle Lowry with the Toronto Raptors. Chris Bosh gets in. I got to say, and I can't believe I'm saying this. I know he looks like a Raptor, but Chris Bosh has kind of impressed me. Because the way he changed his game when LeBron was down there, and now he's stepping back up and transitioning back into a player that you can depend on every night to get you, you know, 20 and 10. I got to give Chris Bosh a little bit of credit. I know he looks kind of like a dinosaur, but Jimmy Butler makes the squad. We actually have three Atlanta Hawks. I was kind of hoping none of the Atlanta Hawks would get on the All-Star roster, but Al Horford, Paul Millsap, and Jeff Teague get on. Kyrie Irving gets on from the Cleveland Cavaliers, so he'll be dribbling around. And then Dwayne Wade makes the East roster as well. No Kyle Korver. I was a little bit surprised at that. Over on the West side, Blake Griffin gets in. Mark Gasol gets in. Kobe Bryant gets in. We talked about that last week. He has no business being on that team. Anthony Davis, who again just seems like he puts up like 24 and 15 every single night, is in. And Steph Curry, who might be your MVP candidate right now, gets in. Also for the West, LaMarcus Aldridge, Boogie Cousins gets in. Tim Duncan, who might be bizarrely playing the best basketball of his career right now, gets in. Kevin Durant, I don't know if Durant belongs. I love Durant, but he just hasn't played that many games. James Harden has really turned his game around as well. He's actually, I can't believe I'm saying this, playing a little bit of defense. I know. Who knew? Chris Paul, Klay Thompson, and Russell Westbrook gets in. A couple of surprises for me on the West side. Dallas has nobody. Dirk doesn't get in. Monte Ellis doesn't get in. You would think someone from Dallas. I mean, they're sixth in the West. I know the West is stacked, but Damian Lillard doesn't get in. Damian Lillard is probably the best player on Portland's team. And LaMarcus Aldridge gets in ahead of him. And then Memphis, not a huge deal, but Memphis only gets one player. I mean, Zebo doesn't get in. I don't know. Zach Randolph should be in there. Mike Conley should probably be in there too. Looking at the three-point contest, and I'm not huge on the contest. I'm not huge on the dunk contest, three-point contest. But I'm looking at this three-point contest, and I got to say, I might actually watch it. But look at the names they are at least saying are going to be in this, and it's not final yet. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kyle Korver, Wes Matthews, and J.J. Redick. I might have to find time to watch that. And like I said, I'm not a huge three-point contest guy or any of the contests, but that is loaded. That is a great contest. That's actually must-see TV if that is the lineup. Now, let's talk about the dunk contest. Because, see, and again, I hate to be the, well, back in my day, they play. But the dunk contest is falling apart every year more and more. For one, we have players in here who we do not know, which is painful enough. But two, then they keep changing the format where it's no longer like just the best dunks. It used to just be, okay, you got like 30 seconds, get your dunk down, and then we'll rate you. Now, it's like they made it like a team sport, and I don't even know who won last year. I think John Wall might have won last year, but maybe the East won last year. Or maybe John Wall and a plus one. I don't have any idea who won the dunk contest. Look at the lineup this year. Victor Oladipo, nice player. And he's a little bit smaller. He's not a huge guy, so 6'3", 6'4", always looks better dunking because it looks better. Mason Plumlee, so we have our token white guy. Zach LaVine, I don't even know who that is. And then Giannis Antetokounmpo. Again, no idea who that is. We used to have Michael Jordan. We used to have Julius Irving. We used to have Dominique Wilkins and Kobe Bryant and Vince Carter. I realize there's pressure on you if you go in the dunk contest, but can we get someone who we even know who they are? I'm not asking. I'm not saying LeBron, you know, you've got to be in it. I'm not saying even that, but can we get somebody who we know? I don't even know who these guys are. I mean, Oladipo and Plumlee, I've heard of. I don't have any idea. I'm not watching. And the worst part now is because these guys, the creativity has kind of gone by the wayside. The worst part now is that we're bringing a car out on the court and like we're going to have somebody jump off a motorcycle. Can we just see a good dunk? Can we just see a good creative dunk? You don't have to fly in a helicopter and jump over it. I just want to see a good dunk. The dunk contest is just sadly getting worse and worse every single year, as we do every single week. We have our Daily Dose top five this week. And, you know, I thought a number of different directions to go. I thought about, you know, some Super Bowl things and some things like that. But what we came up with the Daily Dose top five this week is the Daily Dose top five decisions made by Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll, the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks, obviously did not have a great finish to the game Super Bowl Sunday with the pass that he had called when you clearly should have ran the ball, you clearly should have kept it a little bit more safe, and you would have won the Super Bowl. Not his greatest moment. What you might not realize, though, is he's had a few moments like that. Just go back to 2006 in the Rose Bowl, national championship game. Pete Carroll, head coach at USC, facing Texas. Texas's offense starts to get going. USC has given up a big lead, and late in the game, with USC having the ball fourth and two from about their own 40, he decides, we're going to go for it. We're gonna win it right here. I'm going to go for it, fourth down. And I don't know with Pete, I don't know if it's arrogance. I think that's what it is. I think he feels like, I am smarter than everyone else, and so I'm going to beat you here. And so Pete Carroll goes for it on fourth down. He doesn't even have his best running back in the game. He goes with Lendale White. Nothing against Lendale White, but you have Reggie Bush over on the sideline standing there. I might want to get him into the game. They run Lendale White. Instead of two, he actually gets just one. Texas takes over, goes right down the field and scores, and Texas beats USC in the Rose Bowl. Another big-time game, big-time decision, not such a great decision by Pete Carroll. But, you know, we've got five other decisions made by Pete Carroll that you might not realize were out there. Five other decisions. So the top five decisions made by Pete Carroll. Number five, 1978. NFC Championship game, Giants versus Eagles. The Giants are up 17-12 with 31 seconds left. Game is effectively over. The Eagles are out of timeouts. But instead of just taking the snap and kneeling on it, quarterback Joe Pisarcik tries to hand off because Pete Carroll told him, hand off to Larry Zonka instead. Mishandled the handoff. Ball is fumbled. Eagles' Herm Edwards scoops it up, runs it back for the touchdown, and the Eagles are headed to the Super Bowl instead of the Giants. That fast, because Pete Carroll told him to. Number five on our list. Number four, 1993. College basketball national championship, Michigan versus North Carolina. 19 seconds left, Michigan down by two. Chris Webber gets the rebound, and then he actually travels, but they didn't call it. Dribbles into the front court, Michigan down by two. Pete Carroll, if you look at the film, you'll see Pete Carroll on the bench yelling, call timeout, call timeout. The problem was there were no timeouts left. Webber calls a timeout. That is a technical. Carolina gets two free throws plus the ball. Game over. Thanks, Pete Carroll. You didn't know that, did you? See, you thought Pete Carroll was just, you know, college coach. No, no, no. You might not realize other things that he's been involved in. He has just a penchant for doing the wrong thing at the wrong time. Number three on our list of bad Pete Carroll decisions, 1984, the NBA draft. Pete Carroll tells the Portland Trailblazers, you have to select Kentucky forward Sam Bowie, because Sam Bowie is going to become the greatest player ever. He is going to revolutionize the world of athletic merchandising. They Portland Trailblazers take Sam Bowie. With the next pick in the draft, the Chicago Bulls select out of North Carolina, Michael Jordan. Nice call, Pete. Good job on that one. Great decision on that one, Pete. Number two on our list. Again, we're having to go back a little ways. I had to do some research on this. Number two, you might not realize this. 1937. Pete Carroll insists that the German airship, the Hindenburg, be inflated with hydrogen instead of helium. Oh, only one problem, Pete. Hydrogen is flammable. 36 fatalities later, oh, the humanity, Pete Carroll. And number one on our Daily Dose top five decisions made by Pete Carroll. 1912. We had to go back a ways for this one. 1912, little Petey Carroll insists that the British passenger ship, the Titanic, is unsinkable and does not need enough lifeboats. And so, as a result, they only have enough lifeboats for roughly like half the passengers. And they lost some of those when the Titanic hits an iceberg. 2,200 people aboard the Titanic, only 700 saved. Not enough lifeboats, thanks to Pete Carroll. Attaboy, Pete. I know you were a little fellow when this happened. People, I don't know why they would listen to a little kid at this point. And how old is Pete? My goodness. He is going back a ways making bad decisions. Anyways, there's our Daily Dose top five bad decisions made by Pete Carroll. Hey, it's like a history lesson when you come here. Again, the Daily Dose, it doesn't just entertain, it informs, and you learn things every week. Hey, next week, we will look forward a little bit to the NFL season and what teams to keep an eye on. We will talk a little bit about the NBA All-Star Game. Going to talk a little bit about the NHL. I still have a story concerning Colorado and the NHL that I want to get out there. And we will talk some about the college football signing day that went on today. We'll recap some of the best teams. I'm not going to dig into it too deep, but I want to at least give you an idea of what teams, you know, they're saying sign the top players. And as usual, we will have our Daily Dose top five, a very popular segment here. Hey, if you're listening, I really do appreciate it. If you can, do me a favor, go to Podomatic, go to thepodcastdirectory.com, give us a good review, give us a rating, talk about how much you love the show, give us that five-star review. It gets us up into the hot and the upcoming podcast. It seems like our numbers are getting a little bit better every week, and I do appreciate that so much. As usual, I have to thank JSP. Could not do this without you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Welcome to the Startup Fair. Are you an exhibitor?
Yeah, Rachel Dunn, Twinkle Cupcakes.
Right. Got your schedule and coffee token?
Yep.
Oh, and your public liability insurance?
No.
We need it for all stallholders. Contact Direct Line. Their annual public liability policy covers you at trade fairs, and they'll email right away to confirm you're covered.
So I could still set it up today?
Sure.
With an extra coffee token.
Nice try. Next, please.
Instant proof and confirmation of cover. Can your public liability insurance do that? Search Direct Line Public Liability Insurance. Valid email address required, underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.